The Dirty Dozen, Ireland's motorsport legends in conversation with John Kenny. This week, Paddy Hopkirk.
From 9 starting points, including Russia for the first time, the rally drivers converge for the hardest part of the route, the special stages between Reims and Monte Carlo itself. Snow, snow, quick snow. And quickest of them all, the Mini Cooper of Hopkirk and Lydon, number 37. They beat the much-fancied American Ford Falcons, Jungfeld's car finishing second. This year, the sun shines warmest on British cars and drivers. It's our first win since 1956.
Belfast-born Paddy Hopkirk became an international superstar when his Mini Cooper won the Monte Carlo Rally in 1964. It led to an appearance on British television's biggest show, Sunday Night at the Palladium, viewed by over 23 million people. Hopkirk and the Mini became synonymous during the 60s, a time when rallies, like the Monte Carlo, ran for thousands of miles. I travelled to meet Paddy Hopkirk at his home near High Wycombe in England, and he began by recalling his childhood years in Belfast.
I was born in just off the posh Malone Road. We weren't very posh. House called St. Clair. And then during the war, we moved out to White House just before the war. White House on the, what side of that? The east side of Belfast, northeast side of Belfast. And I grew up there, really, and I went to school in Belfast. I remember commuting in. And then eventually, after the war, we moved back into Belfast, Somerton Road, then we moved to the other side of Belfast. But I did go to Clongowes Wood College in the south, and they call it the Eton of Ireland. I keep telling everybody over here that, but nobody's ever heard of it over here. And those Jesuits leave a very strong impression in my mind. And then I went to Trinity. I scraped into Trinity by the skin of my teeth. I did have a car given to me, a thing called a Harding, with a motorcycle engine in the back. And that was in White House. And I remember my father got permission for me to drive it around an estate next door to the house. And so I presume I got the driving bug into my veins at a very early age.
That Harding, I believe, wasn't actually yours. It was a local clergyman owned that.
It was, yes. I better not say which denomination, but yes, he left it to me, and I still got it.
Really? It's still around?
Well, I lost it. I did a radio program in London one day on the John Donne Show, and some guy from Dulwich in London rang up and said he had a Harding in pieces. He was a motorcycle restorer, and I went down to see it, and there it was with a registration number IJ9670. It's in pieces, and I was going to restore it, but I'm afraid it's still lying in tea chests in my barn. But it's in good nick if somebody gets the time to do it one day.
The Austin 7 was the first car that you bought yourself. Did you take part in your first, what's now known as auto test in that car?
Not really. It wasn't suitable, no. I used to go up and down to Trinity, though. I went up and down Belfast, Dublin every weekend, and it was a great little car. I think I kissed my first girl in that car as well.
You did take part in auto testing, where I suppose you learned how to reverse, brake, spin, handbrake, all the skills that would later hone your rallying skills and rallying career.
Well, yes, I mean, that was the flavour of the month. That's what our trials, Saturday afternoon trials, we call them, consisted of, both north and south. You went out and you did a bit of plotting on the map into the Wicklow Mountains, and then they just closed the road, took a crossroads, covered it dirt, you know, and put some chalk down, a few pylons, and then there's a guy there timed you. So we all learnt that. So we were very good at it. And, of course, the Harding had only brakes on the rear wheels, so I already had known that if you lock the rear wheels, you go sideways. So it was a good training.
And why did you get into motorsport in the first place? I mean, it was an era then, I suppose, of gentlemen racers, not as organised as it is now.
Well, it's just circumstance. I think I liked Mechanoset, and I had this car given to me when I was 9, and I had to do something with it, and I just got very interested. And my father was interested in driving cars too. He was a good driver, and he liked good drivers, and the whole family were, really. And then I went to Dublin and joined the Trinity, Dublin University Motorcycle and Light Car Club, which is no more. It sort of terminated last year. And I wasn't much good at anything else. I wasn't very academic, but I was quite good at driving cars, so I found my niche.
And 1954 is the first time that you came to, I suppose, the public's notice. You won the now famous Hewson Trophy, driving a car that your father bought you.
That's right, a Volkswagen Beetle. Yes, it was a good car, believe it or not, and I was very in a second-hand one. But I hadn't had his leg up, I wouldn't be here.
Where does that rank in your motorsport career? I mean, it was obviously the first big trophy that you won?
Well, it got me noticed. There was a chap called Matt McQuaid in Dublin who was brother of the Archbishop then, I think, and he was running the Standard Triumph Assembly plant in Dublin somewhere, and he mentioned my name to the English guy, competition manager called Ken Richardson, and Ken got stuck for a particular event and asked me because he couldn't get anybody else. I couldn't take part in the event because they wouldn't allow a change of driver, but I reminded him of that he had done that, and I hounded him, and he eventually gave me a drive in the RAC rally. And the RAC rally was first few tests, things were driving tests at Blackpool, and of course we were much faster than anybody else, so I sort of made a name for myself before I made a Horlicks of it, you know.
That was 1955, so you were actually leading until the sump broke, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Well, Ken was in a bar somewhere in Blackpool, I think, and he heard on BBC, young unknown Irish driver leading RAC rally. And, I mean, the guys that were the good drivers in those days were pretty posh. They were, you know, Sidney Allard and Ian Appleyard, and these were serious guys with serious cars, so it was quite a shock to the system.
Yeah, you were breaking into what was gentleman races, as we said, people with money, people with background, and here's this upstart from Belfast jumping in and taking the lead in the RSC rally in 1955. You must have surprised a few people.
I certainly did, and surprised myself probably more than anybody. But that at that time, the people were starting to realise that it was a way of selling cars. I mean, Standard Triumph were no idiots. Ken Richardson was a very good competition manager. The cars were well prepared, and they wanted to win the events.
58, you won the first Circuit of Ireland, your first Circuit of Ireland.
Is that right? Yes, well, I did. Yes, I won the circuit a few times, and that was a lovely event to win because I love the Circuit of Ireland. I love Ireland, actually. I really do. I love going back to Ireland. People have time for you, and there's too many people in the other parts of the world, you know. Southeast of England's very crowded.
That was in a Triumph in 1958, and then you switched to the Roots Group team and drove the Sunbeam Rapier. You won two of those circuits then in the early 60s, 61, 62. So you were becoming household name in Ireland and also Circuit of Ireland winner, and that was the days when the circuit was a real circuit.
Yes, I was very lucky to get into the Roots team because the car wasn't great, but their preparation was marvellous. And I had won a Coupe des Alpes. I mean, I had, on the Triumph, I had won a few things in Europe, so I had already started to make my name over here. But I would say a lot of the events weren't known in Ireland very well that I did well in Europe, but the Monte Carlo Rally, when that was the one event that everybody in the world knew about when we started to do that, you know.
Were you getting paid at this stage? Were you making any money out of rallying at that stage?
Not a lot. We were getting paid so much a day. I think we got £40 or £30 a day or something. So if you stayed in a really cheap hotel and ate potatoes all day, you saved money. So we made a profit out of the expenses, and all the flights were paid for, of course. It was a job, and you were able to make a profit on it. And then, of course, the oil companies started to pay a little bit in prize money and what have you. Got better and better.
Another switch then to the BMC outfit. You partnered a couple of Finnish drivers there, including Timo Makinen. RAC Rally second. That Austin Healey 3000 you drove that year, I believe it was a bit of a brute.
Well, the Healey's hard to drive. It's a very quick car. And actually, I joined BMC to get my hands on the Healey because it was an outright rally winner. But it was hard to drive. The Finns were very good at driving a car like that. I mean, Timo Makinen and Rauno Altonen were a very hard act to follow. And I must say, they kept me on my toes. I mean, I suppose internally I hated them because we were all dog-eat-dog. But they taught me a lot. And, I mean, I knew nothing about driving on loose roads till later on. But they could drive cars like the Healey much better than me, really.
You did say that the Finns, the Swedes, because of the roads they had to drive on, became pretty much expert drivers, and it's continued today, hasn't it?
Absolutely, but also if you're a good rally driver in Scandinavia, it's like being like Beckham. I mean, it's got as much following almost as football. Timo Makinen, I think, was given the keys of Finland by the king, whoever it was, when he got back, you know.
1960s, early 1960s as well, the Mini Cooper S made its appearance, the car which you became synonymous with, I suppose, over the years. And with Henry Leiden, you won the 64 Monte Carlo Rally. Now, that started off in Minsk, and it's a 3,000-mile drive. I mean, compared to the rallies that they're doing nowadays, they must seem like a short run to the shops, some of the rallies that they're doing in the World Rally Championship these days. This was an enormously long 3,000-mile rally and one of the top rallies in the world.
Yes, well, it was the top rally in the world because it got so much publicity by the club by starting all over Europe. It got journalists from every country we were in to come down to Monte Carlo, and it got a lot of publicity. It was front page news. It just wasn't motorsport. It was a national thing. It became you were driving for your country. And we made a documentary last year with the BBC, and it was good fun. We went back to Minsk and traced the steps over the route and brought back a lot of memories.
You thought the Mini obviously was suited to it because some of the heavier cars like the Mercedes, the Volvos, the Citroens perhaps just weren't suited to the route because it did start in the depths of winter out in Minsk.
Well, the thing is, Gert Turner was a very clever guy to work for. He was our competition manager, and he hedged his bets. You know, he started one car here, one car there, in case there was a wipeout in snow and the car didn't get through. That could happen some years. And he asked who would like to go to Minsk, and I'd never been to Russia, so I put my hand up. And yes, it was very cold, but the car, the Mini, Alec Issigonis designed the Mini in 1959, first came out, as a district nurse's car. And then the Cooper, John Cooper, came along and got George Harriman to put the Cooper S engine into it. And it, although it was a cheap little car, it was a very high performance car. Very small, light, and very fast, and the front-wheel drive was front-wheel drive. Transverse engine was quite new in those days, so it was a very good performer. But we didn't actually expect to win the rally. I mean, when I started from Minsk, I didn't think I was going to be winning the rally. You know, we had practiced very well. We had a wonderful team. The team of mechanics we had from BMC, from Abingdon, were just wonderful to do anything for you. Cars were immaculately prepared. Drivers were well prepared. We all practiced our guts out. And Stuart Turner was a very clever organizer. We had always the right tires and the right thing for every occasion or change of weather or anything. It wasn't just me, unfortunately. I was the lucky one to be there at the time.
And was it a case of just driving straight from Minsk to Monte Carlo, or did you have a series of tests along the way?
Well, yes, there was a common route. All the routes from Paris, from Oslo, from Glasgow, from Lisbon, from Athens, and from Monte Carlo, all got together in Reims, or Reims, or whatever you like to call it in France. And then we had a common route down. But, oh, yes, there was very... from Chambéry, there was a lot of special stages up over the mountains and down the other side, and a lot of snow, and it suited the Mini because the ploughs had been down the road, and the roads were very narrow, and we really knew what we were at. And Henry Liddon was a wonderful co-driver and a wonderful note reader. And I could really go flat out and rely that he wasn't going to make any mistakes. And so it was all done before we got to Monte Carlo. I mean, the only thing in Monte Carlo was the five laps of the Grand Prix circuit, which was really only a tiebreaker decider thing. You know,
the endurance that rally puts on drivers and also co-drivers, I mean, how did you cope with it?
Well, I think the endurance would be the Iron Curtain. I mean, it's a very sinister place, the Iron Curtain, and you never knew some policeman was just going to stop you and keep you sitting there for 8 hours at the border crossing. You know, it's a bit like that still, funnily enough. And, you know, in Belarus and places like that. Then you came out of the Iron Curtain at the Czech border, and, you know, I remember the soldiers looking under the car with mirrors because people were trying to get out, swim across, parachute across. So here we were coming out of a really foreign land that nobody knew what was going on. There was no television, or, you know, very little television, and there was, you know, there was no radio communication. It was quite fun, actually.
When you actually arrived in Monte Carlo and realised you'd won, what was the feeling like?
Well, we didn't know we'd won when we arrived. I remember stopping on the way down, and Stuart Turner said, "How have you done?" I said, "I don't know. We've done our best. We haven't gone off the road, and haven't had any problems." And Christ, we were nearly late into Monte Carlo because it was a tight section. We were on studs, and I remember going along that lovely twisty road in the south of just outside Monte on the studs, and then we got to the control on time. And then, of course, we were all on Dexedrine to keep awake, which I shouldn't really say, should I? Druggies? Spanchels of Dexedrine, I'll never forget them. And, of course, about one half pint of beer and you were falling over, you know. And the cheapest way to get whistled. And we had a meal and then went to bed. And about 4 o'clock in the morning, Bernard Caillet, a journalist, a very well-known European journalist, like you, he called me up and he said, "I thought I was dreaming." He said, "I think you've won the rally." Because, of course, there was no electronic results. They had to wait they had your start times, the stages, finish times. They all came into Monte Carlo, and somebody had to sit down with a adding machine, if they had them in those days, and work out the difference. So it was a surprise. And he said to me, "You've won by, I forgot, 58 seconds or something." And if you, I hadn't the fastest time, but there was a handicap system. The Fords of Bussy Jungfeld and all of them, they were hundreds of horsepower, and they had gone very well, but we on handicap had it.
Rosemary Smith tells something of the same story when she won the Tulip Rally. She and her co-driver went off to bed for the evening in the hotel to be awoken by a knock on the door by a party to say, "Look, you've won." Would something similar happen to you?
Absolutely. And I mean, of course, then it just descended. I mean, I had no idea how important the Monte Carlo Rally was. And Life magazine came over and did an article with me. And I thought I was a real superstar. And, of course, meeting Princess Grace, who was originally Irish. Now, it's funny, I went up to get the prize from Princess Grace and Prince Rainier, and she shook my hand. I had worked out what I was going to say to her. You know, I'm from Ireland, and I know your name's Kelly. And I didn't say a bloody thing. I was so dumbstruck. She was a good-looking bird.
And you met the Beatles. You Sunday Night at the Palladium was one of the biggest television programs of those days, and you were on that as well. So it wasn't just national fame. It was international fame for Paddy Hopkirk.
The Beatles had got a lift. Ringo Starr had got a lift in one of our cars in Paris. It was one of those Friday night log jams in Paris. And the Mini had given him a lift to his theatre or something. He was staying in the same hotel. And then when it won the rally, he sent the telegram. But they did autograph a picture for me, and I had a guitar given to me in a wig. But I never actually met them, sadly. But I met a lot of people, yes. It was very nice. And the Sunday night at the Palladium was good fun because a lot of people watched that, and I mean, it was, I think it was something like 22 million viewing because there wasn't much else on television. And Bruce Forsyth did it the year I won it, and I saw Bruce the other day. He's still around. I must have got very cocky and ghastly. I apologize to anybody who remembers me when I was like that. I've sort of quietened down a bit now.
It was heady days, though, for you. I mean, 66, the Minis were leading 1-2-3 in the Monte Carlo Rally until they threw them out because of irregularities with the head beams in the car to, I suppose, facilitate Citroën. You won the Acropolis Rally in 67. You know, you were winning rallies all over the place. I mean, just you were becoming an international superstar in rallying terms.
Well, I think the best rally I ever won was the Acropolis. That's the most satisfying because that's difficult, and that the car was marvellous, and it's a very rough rally. And then on the year we were disqualified, I mean, that was awful, and it became an international. Actually gave the rally a lot more publicity because it became an international item. And I remember being interviewed from Monte Carlo on television by Ludovic Kennedy. And, I mean, here was I on a current affairs programme. I was terrified I was going to say something wrong or incorrect.
You also won a couple of Circuit of Ireland's there, 65 and 67. And then 1969, you wrote a book about it too, The Longest Drive, detailing the 1969 London-Sydney 10,000 miles with, it wasn't just one other person in the car, there was two of you, Tony Nash and Alec Poole.
Well, Alec Poole was great. I mean, Alec Poole was still a great friend of, and Tony and I, dear Tony's sadly not with us anymore. But the event was great, and just going somewhere in the dust and the, you know, really getting, we were so thin at the end, you know, you lose so much weight, and very good way, much better than going to a health farm. And you get to know the people in the car, and, you know, it was great, marvellous.
And how did three of you sitting in the one car, Poole and Nash, get on, you know, over 10,000 miles? I mean, there must have been some fractious moments in the heat in places like India, Afghanistan.
Well, I remember Alec brought a gun, a revolver. I think he got it from one of the Garda in Dublin who lent it to him. But we had a gun because we were quite nervous in East Turkey. There was quite a lot of bandits around and Erzincan and places like that. And we did have a revolver in the pocket. But no, we got on to, I don't think there was one crossword, and I mean that. And rallying is good for that reason. It's a bit like ocean racing. I mean, you soon find out who wants to not do the work. And no, we were a great team. We were even good friends with our competitors. I mean, Andrew Cowan, who won it, and his team, I mean, he's still a great friend of mine.
Alec, in his own right, of course, was a well-known motorsport driver. He won the British Touring Car Championship as well, so he knew a bit about cars, and yourself and himself had to do a lot of work on the way.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't tell anybody. I didn't tell Alec anybody that about Alec. I was just saying he was a damn co-driver. No, Alec was terrific. But Alec was not only a good driver, he was a fantastic mechanic. And he was very helpful because sometimes it was a long way between service points, in Australia especially.
I suppose with close proximity to each other, you had to remain good friends.
Oh my goodness, yeah, you certainly find out who your best friend is because you're not exactly smelling like a rose after 3 or 4 days in the car and not having seen any warm water.
Was it a case then, after doing that, that, you know, I know you did Circuit of Ireland rallies, but the escort, the Mark I escort especially with Roger Clark, was coming into more into the fore and became the quintessential rally car. The Minis days were basically coming to an end at that stage, weren't they?
Yes, I think so. The trouble was they couldn't get the power through to the road and the car didn't handle very well on 12-inch wheels. The Escort was a fantastic car and Roger was a fantastic driver. And Porsches were coming up then too. And Stokes took over BMC, as it was then, and closed the competitions department. So I used it as an opportunity to get out because I was already married 3 years, first child born. Married to Jenny, still married to Jenny, lovely Jenny. And I just got out. I did get offered a drive by Lancia. Cesare Fiorio asked me to drive for Lancia, and Lancia was a damn good car, but very Italians are foreigners, and I didn't know that I would be able to understand the culture, so I just used it as an opportunity to quit. I'd had enough. I had 15 years professional. Rallying is everything in life. I wish I'd been a brain surgeon or maybe helped people more because rallying is a pretty selfish sport. I made that decision at that time in my life and people say, would you make that decision again? And the answer is, I suppose, yes, because I thought I was making the right decision at the time. I also liked the glamour and there was nice money as well. It wasn't anything like today, but it was quite good.
I know you did some, the odd one here and there, the Pirelli Marathon was won in 1990 with Alec, which I think you won.
Well, Alec Poole built the car for that. It was wonderful. He got an old Mini, a 65 Mini, and redid it. Called it the Hopkirk One. He did 3 or 4 of them. And we won it. We amazed ourselves because we beat, you know, MGs driven by Stirling Moss and Ron Gammon. And it was dog-eat-dog, but it was good fun. And yeah, and I did a 82 REC rally, a Mini, which I won also with Brian Cultureth. He was another great friend of mine. We'd done the World Cup rally and same team in Triumph 2.5 PIs. I think that was probably one of the most interesting rallies. Spending 3 months in South America practicing for the London to Mexico World Cup rally was very enjoyable. It was great to see South America.
Despite the fact that you retired, you still had the grow and the love for it and you wanted to go back to doing odd events and you were still competitive.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, the last one I did really was 94. I did the Monte Carlo in 94 for oh my God, Rover. And we did quite well. And then on the last night, the fan belt gave up and we lost our lights and water pump. But when we got to Monte Carlo, they made a real fuss of us in the Mini. And when I went up, I mean, and Prince Rainier wasn't getting up to shake anybody's hands. And they brought us up quite early, although we hadn't won anything as such. And he got up and came over and gave Ron and I a gold watch each. And I said to him, does that mean you definitely don't want to see us back again? Like the retirement gold watch.
And like the movie as well, Paddy Hopkirk became synonymous with the Mini. I mean, it's you go hand in hand.
Yes, and the Italian Joe. We were always very annoyed because when Michael Caine made the original Italian Joe, we were going to be the stunt drivers. But because we weren't members of the Equity Union, we weren't allowed to do it.
So you've been, well, you haven't retired. You're still working. A sales marketing company called Smarter Direct. Obviously, life is pretty busy for you.
Yes, very busy. Well, I saw my manufacturing business was sold 10 years ago. I just work for companies, a couple of big companies, but I mainly call on the motor industry now. We sell, for example, the locking nuts that go on cars to stop people stealing the alloy wheels. And I'm really the door opener and chief bottle washer, and I enjoy that very much. I think I enjoy success. Don't make much money out of it, but I enjoy the success of it, and I don't try to work with people I like. I don't like aggro, you know.
I think, you know, life has been pretty good for you. I mean, you're still spoke about glowing terms in Ireland as well, about being the top rally driving name that this country's ever produced.
Well, you're very kind to say that. That's for the over 60s who remember me. I mean, I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire as a question recently, and nobody knew who the hell I was because they were all under, well, they were quite young. But I think success in life is not money, it's happiness and doing what you want to do. And I think the thing that upsets me more than anything is people who take themselves too seriously. I mean, I've always had good fun, and I've got a good marriage, I think, and three nice children who I see a lot of. And that's all you want, you know. And I've got grandchildren now too. That's really all you want out of life. And I'm very lucky that I had a bit of fun too, seeing the world.
In the overall context of your rallying career, if you look back at two things that you could tell us, the best moment and the one you regret.
Well, I say overall what I regret is not being nicer to people, probably being quite bossy with mechanics. And probably the one moment I'm most pleased about is the one where I told the policeman in France that I was out of the Monte Carlo, the year we won it, and I went up a one-way street. It was very snowy in Colmar, and I went up a one-way street the wrong way, and the signs were all covered with snow, and this very nasty policeman got us, and there were coupons in the book, which if they removed, you got penalty points. And Henry, being a good, honest English gentleman, this guy asked for the book, and Henry was about to hand it to him, which I interfered and accepted and hid the book, and I told him we were out of the rally, and I was on the way home, and I just had a death in Ireland, and he almost started to cry. And as soon as we got round the corner, we were off again. And I think that I pulled a real flanker on a French policeman.
Paddy Hopker, thank you very much.
Thanks, John, for coming all the way over to see me.
Next week on Ireland's Motorsport Legends, John Watson.
Poor Clare Regazzoni arrived at Heathrow Airport 36 hours later to find out that the seat that he had expected to sign for had been signed up with me. And sorry, Clay, Bernie's done a deal with John Watson.